We have one rule in the firm. Everybody sits around a table before we walk into court, the client included. And I look at everybody and I say, have we done everything we can? And if the answer is yes, then we go to court and we live with the results. But I promise that to people. And that is a big cost, not just for me, but for everybody on my team.
Welcome everyone to We Talk, where we sit down with women entrepreneurs and discuss their successes, failures, and journey along the way. Today, we are joined by Ashley Lively, who is the owner and managing attorney at Lively Law Firm. Started in 2019, they are focused on client experience and fostering a culture of accepting every case. I've known Ashley for a few years now, but I really have not sat down and talked to her about starting her business and growing in the last 4 years. But one of the biggest takeaways that I've had, and I hope you experience this as well, is really trying to take the feelings and combining those feelings with data as you're growing your business and working with employees. I hope that you enjoy this as much as I enjoyed having this conversation.
Did you actually read any of the questions by the book?
I did read the questions.
Hey, look at that.
I didn't prepare.
Even though I was a little bit delayed on that one.
No, the timing of the questions did not affect any of my prep. I looked at it this morning. So
if you don't, because we talked a little bit beforehand, why is your guys' ultimate goal to come back to Pittsburgh?
I just like the city.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like it's like very small town, blue collar, even though it's a city. But it like has like a good food scene and a good music scene. And it just.
We have a good food scene?
Yeah.
Do we?
Yes.
Wow.
Like Charlotte is about 3 times the population of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And Pittsburgh has as much like culinary diversity as Charlotte does.
See, I feel like I need to broaden my horizon.
Yeah.
Kristen and I went on vacation to North Beach, Maryland, and we found like this like cheese charcuterie board restaurant.
Oh, cool.
And it was super cool. Like yeah. They came over and we just told them like, we don't like spicy cheese.
Right.
Kind of don't like stinky cheese, but like mm-hmm. other than that. Right. And they bring over like all these cheeses.
That's cool.
And they have like a little mm-hmm. story about all of them. And mm-hmm. like, it was delicious. And it was like a whole experience.
Oh, I love that.
I know, right? Super easy. And they had like super fancy drinks that were non-alcoholic, which is very hard to find.
Yes. Yeah.
So like I felt fancy and she felt fancy.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
You can be a cheesemonger. That's a job.
Oh.
And you like taste and rate cheese.
Huh.
Which is maybe instead of a farmer, I'll be a cheesemonger.
There you go. I would love to sit there and just eat and judge cheese.
Right.
All
just
the
like
time.
Describe the flavor profile.
Yeah.
But yes, Pittsburgh has a really good food scene.
Yeah. Now I know, right? So maybe you'll have to give me some recommendations, even though I'm the one who's here all the time. Awesome. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on and talking a little bit about your business. Why don't you go ahead and kick us off? Tell us a little bit about your background and tell us about Lively Law Firm.
Yeah. So I have been an immigration attorney my whole career in law school. I did a little bit of public defender work. And so I knew that I wanted to go into defense work, and I had traveled abroad and had some language skills. So immigration law felt right. It was like the right mix of my skills. So I worked in Pittsburgh for almost a decade, then needed some new opportunities. And I went down to Charlotte, and we chose Charlotte because it's like notoriously one of the most difficult jurisdictions like immigration court. Like the overall approval rating in the Charlotte immigration court is under 10%.
Oh, wow.
And in Philadelphia, which is over Pittsburgh, it's around 40 or 50, which is pretty normal. 40 to 50 is like a pretty normal percentage. So I went down to Charlotte to see how good I was because like in Pittsburgh, it's like a testament to the judges, but like pretty much you win the cases you should and you lose the cases you should. In Charlotte, you got to put a lot into cases you should win. And then even then you're like, I'm not sure if we won the case. So went to Charlotte to see how good I was, got better, kind of like a lesson about like adversity, sharpening your own skills, and decided that I wanted to start a firm with a kind of a universal representation model, but on the private side. So in Charlotte in particular, lawyers would tell clients, don't waste your money. You're going to lose these judges. You should move. But like sometimes people want to live in Charlotte and their families are there, and, you know, and so they don't want to move to Pittsburgh or wherever, or New York, or, you know. So I decided I wanted to start a firm, and like our mantra is, we will take your case no matter how strong it seems on day one, and we will give you the best representation possible, and we're going to like honor the investment that you're going to make with our firm. And so we do that in all facets, but the court side of the firm is kind of my passion, and the origin story. So if you truly have a fear of returning to your country, whether or not the law agrees that the reason you're afraid warrants giving you immigration status, we're going to like fight to be creative on the legal side and work really hard to present your story to the judge, like in a way that gives you the best chance of winning. Because, you know, like, okay, the judges are very difficult. So the attorneys then tell the clients that the judges are very difficult. So then they don't go to court, and it becomes this cycle of making it harder by not trying, right? Like if you try really hard, the percentage will go up. And I don't know how other attorneys in the area feel about like, if you try really hard, the percentage goes up. Like we've been really lucky to just like have a good team that really does a good job on the cases. But that's kind of how I started the firm. And that was kind of the mindset that I didn't like people coming in and being like, it's going to be really hard to win. Like, it's not worth it. Especially when you're talking to people that like are afraid they're going to die if they get deported. Like, it's definitely worth it to try, you know? So that's kind of how we started. That was the heart of the firm when we started.
For me, the first thing that kind of pops in as a question is more along the lines of like, how do you balance that as now the business owner with multiple associates? You know, that's a great mission, but I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my assumption would be that's probably a lot more time. It's probably a lot more effort, and maybe your investment compensates for that. But like, how do you balance that where it's like, that's a great mission and I commend you for it, but there's also a business side of things. So have you mastered, or do you have anything to talk about as far as the investment?
Definitely have not mastered it. I would say that is probably the biggest barrier to growth. People want to hire us, and they want to hire us because I sit down and I look at people, or I'm over the phone with them, and I promise them that we have one rule in the firm. When we walk into court, everybody sits around a table before we walk into court, the client included. And I look at everybody and I say, have we done everything we can? And if the answer is yes, then we go to court and we live with the results. But I promise that to people. And that is a big cost, not just for me, but for everybody on my team. And so it's a challenge because this area of law is so human that there's no case where I'm like, you know what? This is the case where I'm going to try to be hands off. You know, like this one's fine, you know, so every case we want to win. And so I've gotten really lucky with a couple of really good attorneys who buy into the mission, like what we're doing. At the core of what we're doing is we're just telling stories, right? Like there's a law component, but really it's about presenting people as like unique individuals and unique stories. And so I have a lot of people that buy into the storytelling aspect of what we're doing, which is really important. And so they make it easy to work with them, and they're very smart and they work really hard. But yeah, often I'm like managing after hours and working during business hours. Not the end goal, because I think that ultimately we can help more people if I can get out of the day-to-day and kind of train and grow a team. But it's been a challenge to get out of that. I would say that the way that we've done it, so I have a business coach and he encourages me to like manage by the numbers. So that's been one of the ways that I've been able to do it. So I look at the numbers, I take a step back and say, okay, like what are data points that are important to the mission? And then everybody's accountable to that. You need to do this every week. We're checking on these numbers. It's much more efficient. And I think it like focuses everybody on like, what are the tasks that get done that have an impact, not only on the business, but on our clients' cases? And so that has helped because at the beginning I would like sit down and okay, like how's everybody feeling? How do we feel like it's going? I feel this way. And like sometimes I feel accurately about what's happening and sometimes I don't, but like just like using data is a lot easier than having to like check in and like then reflect if like my personal experience or one of my employees' personal experience is actually reflecting. Cause sometimes I'm super stressed and that's not accurate. You know, sometimes I'm super stressed and I look at the numbers like, oh, everything's fine. You know, so that's been the only tool that I've really developed so far, but that's a constant struggle, like how to get out of the actual work and into management a little bit more.
I love that you brought up the data, right? So I was just out to dinner with some friends last night and one is a president of a counseling center and his husband looked over and was like, you have the mind of a, like a spreadsheet, but the heart of a monk. And I was like, that's actually kind of brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. And to your point, I was the same way where it was like, I feel like you're doing a good job. I feel like things mm-hmm. are moving in a good way. But to have the accountability that you had mentioned and to kind of just say like, are my feelings aligned? Oh, no, they're not, because I could have got a bad night's sleep, right? And then my feelings could be completely mm-hmm. off, even if the data isn't correct. Right. So I love that you have correlated that for you guys because you do have such an emotionally heavy, you know, service that you're providing and people that you're talking to that you need that sort of correlation.
Yeah. And at the beginning of this year, I felt like, oh, we are on the right track for profitability. We're on the right track for growth. And I sat down in Q1 and I looked and I realized that we were overstaffed by two, like double. And I was like, oh, we have a lot more capacity to help more people. And so, you know, I had conversations with marketing, but the reason that I started diving into that is because every time somebody would complain that they were too busy, I'm like, okay, I'll get you help. Like, okay, I'll get you help. And like, instead of trying to find efficiencies or actually find the answer about production. And so then, you know, I had to be like, okay, everybody's doing half what they used to be doing. And like, I have now created a culture of, if you complain about being busy, I solve the problem by hiring someone instead of actually looking at the data and then saying, okay, why do you feel busy? The production is the same, or okay, you are busier. Let's try and find efficiencies. And so the cost of not managing by the data is usually like you're overstaffed and your net revenue is not great.
Yeah. And not then, looking at your data actually ends up costing you more than actually looking at your data.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
That was one of the things we learned. We just recently had a growth spurt, but when I started sitting down and I'm like, you just started, how can you be this busy? Like, obviously I grew to a certain point in time knowing full well that like there would be work and there would be offset. But once I sat down and I started looking at them, I'm like, dude, you're clicking four times to what should be two clicks. Like you're crazy inefficient.
Right.
And I just needed to talk to you about that because lack of experience, whatever that may actually be. So again, looking at your data helps you reinforce that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Love it.
And it also helps message a little bit better. So when I started and when you're small, everybody's doing like three jobs and there's like this very tight bond and this sense of camaraderie. And then as you start to grow and like at the beginning, you're like, everybody gets a bonus, right? Because everybody's doing four jobs. Everybody gets a bonus. And then as you start to grow, you can't really give bonuses or compensation increases because like you feel like they're working hard, right? Because like you don't notice the time. Like there's lulls. Like that's work. Like it ebbs and flows. And so as you grow, like you're like, okay, I can't give everybody 25% of their income bonus at the end of the year or else like this is our last year together as a firm. And so growth kind of forces you to do that because you have to be more calculated when you're bigger. The bigger that you get, the more calculated you have to be. And it helps message to people. You know, when people come to me, I'll say, okay, look, here are the numbers. This is what you get paid. As a business owner, we have to make 3X of that or else, you know, that's my job. And this is what you have to produce monthly. And if you produce more than that, then we all make more money, including you. And so for some personalities, they love it. Like they love the predictability. They love knowing because I found that there was like a lot of anxiety. When you're super busy, like in our line of work, you're never going to get everything done and then go home. Like you have to know, like, did I do a good day's work today? And when you just start, there was a lot of anxiety for new hires that because there was always work, they didn't know like if they were doing enough. And I didn't realize that till like several years in. And so like actually creating like KPIs, like key performance indicators, I thought it was going to stress people out and it did the opposite. They're like, oh, I got exactly done what I was supposed to get done. There's more to do, but I feel good because I know that I did what I was expected to do. And so I was super hesitant to implement KPIs, which are like, they're quotas, right? Like we call them something different, but they're quotas. I was super hesitant to introduce those because I didn't want people to feel like I was micromanaging, and it did the opposite. People were like relaxed. They're like, oh, I'm doing great. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. The ambiguity sometimes is more stressful than the actual like, hey, I know what the finish line is.
Right.
Or I know what I'm actually walking towards.
Exactly.
So exactly. I absolutely love that. And so this is, so I'm 8 years into this and like at a very similar stage of where you're at, but you're two, three?
2019.
So 2019. Four. So that would be 4 years
four.
Now.
Four in February.
So you have learned a lot. How can you attribute this like learning curve? Because that's a lot of big girl lessons, actually.
Yeah. So one of the things I like about having my own business is that like it's a double-edged sword, right? So I can be as much as I want to, right? And there's that awesome upside where like everything else in my life, I never felt like, I felt like there was always a ceiling that I didn't impose, whether it be because of my natural ability or because I was working for somebody else, right? Like I wanted to be in the WNBA. My natural ability was my ceiling, right? So in business, I truly feel like I don't have a ceiling, right? I just don't. And so, and yes, there are ceilings, you know, for reasons, but like not really, right? Like, and so, but the other side of that is like learning how to be content in the journey, which was not a lesson I learned until later, right? So part of my personality is that like, I am not enjoying my success now. Like I am trying to think about next year's success, which is not the healthiest way to live as a human. So to answer the question, about a year in, I was like, oh, I'm out of my depth here. If I continue on like this, like I'm just going to work until I die. Because the first year, Shantae and I worked, oh, I think we calculated, it was some like 254 days in a row.
Wow.
Over 10-hour days.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, that's fine. It's the first year. It's part of the hustle. But I realized that like, I did not know what I was doing on the business side. I'm a really good lawyer. I was not a really good business person. And so I reached out to like a coaching program. My first coach there happened to be somebody in my industry, exactly immigration law, who had done a really, really good job when he sold his business. Mm. And I just learned from him, right? Like sometimes we would just sit down and I'd be like, okay, what is a balance sheet? What is cash flow? Like, what are the things that I need to know? Because all of the firms that I've worked at previously were small firms and they are all still in business. They have been long-time firms. They obviously can maintain their company. But lawyers have this thing where they think they're good at everything and they think they're really good business people. And I just like, I didn't want to do that. Like I didn't want to stay small forever. And I knew that I needed to like understand profit. Like I say phrases now that I like was not saying 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So coaching, like learning from people that know more than me. Shantae and I do have just like a natural knack for like figuring out what's going to work, but for sure, just learning from people that are actual business people.
Set some context for people who haven't known you for 10 years as to who Shantae is.
Shantae will be my legal wife in September.
Hey!
But we've been together for like 9 years and we started the firm together. She has a background in social work, but when I started the firm on day one and I thought, okay, we have this in savings. We're not going to make money for 6 months, but I'm going to make it work. And on day one, I was like, oh, so many people came to us. I went home. I was like, Shantae, like, you have to quit your job. Like, you have to like come and help me. So like, she's been at the firm since, I mean, even with the planning of the firm, we like sat down and she planned it with me. And really it was her idea for me to start the firm. She just like saw that I was unhappy and she's like, okay, you got to start your own firm. And so she was the catalyst for me making the decision. But she's been a part of like doing policy and procedure and managing staff. And, you know, she manages more staff than I do at the firm. And she just has like a natural ability for it. So we like, We got lucky in a lot of ways. But.
And she's handling more of the operations overall, correct?
She manages all the support staff on the legal production side.
Got it.
So she also like learned the law, you know, 254 days working nonstop. It's a lot of experience.
Right.
So,
and I have also found social workers are just like really good managers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because my wife is also a social worker mm-hmm. and like really good manager, like understands the feeling,
yes,
you know, and then also can like articulate it back in a sense that like makes someone feel good, but also like guiding them in a good direction. Like she's done it for me a couple of times, right. And I was like, pretty sure you just insulted me, but I feel really good right now.
Shantae is very good at like understanding where people are.
Mm.
I am really good at understanding where I am and what I need, and that is difficult to manage people from that spot.
Yeah.
And so Shantae is like very good. Well, also every single position that she's managing, she had to do when we started the firm. So it helps that she is like an expert in what they're actually doing, like the actual production side. But she also is just like really good at like understanding where people are, validating their feelings and their problems, and then like helping them find a solution. She's a much better manager than I am just naturally. So it's been good.
Yeah. So let's go back to the coach. Thank you for setting the context. I have to commend you because even myself, and I don't know if it's a woman thing, but I see it a lot in women
mm-hmm.
where we see a limitation and then we just kind of think, oh, we need to learn more mm-hmm. or we try to learn more. And yeah. you very quickly realized, hey, I have a limitation. I'm a lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. Started a business. Love it, but like need help. And you brought someone in really soon.
Yeah.
I do, looking back on it myself, wish I would have done it faster mm-hmm. as well. But I went to try to learn those own things myself and not realize my job is someplace else, right? I need someone to either help me and then that probably 3x your growth.
Yeah, for sure. When I went to, you know, they have like a pitch day, you know, for coaching companies. And they're very good at what they do. But when I went, I was the newest business that I met. I had been a year. After a year, I was like, okay, I need to like learn. And most other companies are like 7 or 8 years in, or people were nearing retirement and wanted to get their business to a place where they could sell it. Part of that is just my personality. Like I'm just like super driving and like action oriented. But another part of that was like just dreaming big before I started. So like, I remember like before we started, like Shantae and I call it the purple book. We had this like little purple journal and we wrote down, like we like laid in the floor of the living room when we were planning and we like wrote everything. We're like, what font do we like? What are our values going to be? What if we could dream without the guilt of like family situations or like who we think we're supposed to be, like what is our dream? Like what's the biggest we could dream? And like that really helped because like after year one, I was like, I don't just want to be a solo forever. Like in the purple book before like things were really hard and we had worked for a year straight, like we wanted to be like something bigger. And I was just, I don't know. I just knew that like, if I didn't get somebody's expertise about how to hire and how to price structure, I was going to work myself to death. I just knew that I was just going to work myself to death. So like one time somebody asked me like, well, what do you attribute like your success to? getting lucky a lot, you know, like it's not only that, but like there's a lot of smart people in the world. There's a lot of people that work hard in the world. And like, I think I'm a hard worker and smart, but I don't think I'm like an alien when it comes to those two characteristics. You know, like we got really lucky on some hires and we got really lucky on our business coach and we got really lucky with the market. And so sometimes we just got lucky. Like with my business coach, I really got lucky that I like got somebody that was perfect for what we were trying to do.
But I commend you though, for at least giving yourself the balance. Yes, it is a lot about luck. But you know, I haven't been working with you inside of a business. And for context, for all of our listeners, I met Ashley on a rugby field. And even then I knew you were always on the field so much smarter than a lot of the other players. I would always say to myself, like, you worked smarter and not harder, thinking that many far ahead. And like when we played, you were a part of, you know, two to three people who had a vision of us going to win nationals, right? Mm-hmm. And like you drove everyone that way. So Right. Yeah, you're very smart, right? And I know that even, you know, the fact that if you weren't a lawyer, like you're very smart, but you're also, you have clear visions and you know how to like lean people in those directions when you have that vision. And yeah, some of it is kind of luck, but right. I love the fact that you're giving space for both because both are true.
Yeah. And like, I was, it's like maybe a discussion for another time about like, if the dreams are the correct size for, you know, like reality, but like, if you don't dream big, for sure, you won't get there. And so like, I just like, don't care to fail. And I think that sometimes is people don't want to say like, oh, this is what I really want. Cause it's like, you're definitely going to fail multiple times and you might ultimately fail.
Right.
But like there was a period of time where Shantae and I had to like sit down and like deconstruct what we thought we deserved, because neither Shantae or I come from like a very wealthy background. And so like when you start to make money and you don't come from a wealthy background and you're serving people who are disenfranchised in a lot of ways, there's like a level of guilt associated with that. For example, we decided to get our dog food delivered. It doesn't cost extra. It's the same amount, but like it feels like not the way that either of us were raised. And we had to just be like, you know, like that is okay. Like, it's okay to have your dog food delivered, which like sounds silly now, but there was like a very, like, I mean, 6 months or a year where we were like deconstructing like what we thought we deserved. Cause like as the business is successful, you know, your personal life changes as well. And that can be very difficult. It can be very difficult with families. It can be very difficult with friend groups. And so that's part of the work. Like you don't just like dream. I mean, it's not easy to dream. It's easy to dream and never achieve it because like your life never changes. But if you actually start to achieve it, there's like a lot, there's some downside that I like never anticipated. So it's important to like remember that like the more successful we are, the more people we have helped, the more cases we have won, you know? And so, but yeah, dreaming is, as you start to achieve it, can trigger things like in your life.
And I appreciate you talking a lot. This was one of the surprising things for me, was the sort of inward to outward, like how much I needed to, per your point of you and Shantae sitting down and being like, let's unpack some of this guilt that we have and pay and whatever that may actually be. Like that's very self-reflective of you guys, right? You're working on your inside to help on the outside growth. And that's always been something surprising. And I hear it a lot as far as the limitations of the business is a limitation of me. So if I've hit a quote unquote ceiling, to use your term, the business has hit that ceiling. So I have to continually, not only from an emotional standpoint, but from a professional development standpoint, from a, you know, understanding data, things like that. As I continue to grow, the business will continue to grow. And if I stop that, the business does as well.
Exactly.
And it also is just the fact of like, hey, you know, me going and taking a walk or going for a bike ride helps my business grow. That was a big one for me where I was like, let's remove the guilt from me taking an hour away mm-hmm. when that hour is going to make the next four that much more productive.
Right.
I still, even to this day, I'm like, yeah, I could get so much done in that right. hour. Right? Right. So like, yeah. It does, it's inward to outward constantly for me.
Exactly. There's a culture in like the legal community that there's like a lot of status that is associated with working an unhealthy amount of hours. If you go to a happy hour with attorneys, they're like, man, I'm putting in 12-hour days. I keep my suit at the office and I shower and change, didn't go home last night, pulled an all-nighter. And I find myself like even falling into that. But there's like, it is idolized, like overworking. And so every attorney I get, not every attorney, most attorneys I get in my firm, they've internalized that. And so like, I have to say like, actually, it's better for your clients if you sleep for 8 hours. Like you think that your idea on like hour 16 is like gonna change the world. And actually it's not, it's just tired. Shantae and I have the worst work-life balance of everyone, but I work really hard to make sure that my employees have a work-life balance because same. The magic happens in like the time that you have to ruminate.
Right.
Like if I'm like down to the wire writing a brief, like I never get to sit back and like think like, what's like a new angle I could take on that? Cause I'm trying to like make sure the semicolons are in the right place, you know? And so that's something I try to like, I should do better myself, but I really try to make sure that people like have space. Cause I really do think that's where like creativity and new ideas for processes and new ideas, it comes like in the space when you're not like pushing yourself to the edge.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I do the same thing for my employees. And I, from my standpoint, I always sit there and think I'm the one that decided to start the business.
Right.
And I have, not that they don't have drive, but I have the drive to continue a lot of this stuff. I still should take a bike ride or go for a walk. Right, like I'm not saying any of that, but like to put myself and my employees in the same bracket is just setting myself up for, you know, bad expectations.
Right. So, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
How many lawyers are you at now? I actually don't know.
We have.
Or how big's your team?
We're a team of 22.
Holy cow.
And there's four licensed attorneys and one attorney who does some of the writing, but her license isn't active. So 4 to 5, depending on how you define it.
That's awesome, Ashley. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
4 years. 22 people.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Like every year, you know, we're like, oh, we're redoing literally everything.
Yeah.
Right. Like every, you know, if you double every year, you're doing the first year every year for 4 years because the processes you had that worked for 3 people do not work for 6 people. So.
And what is the current vision?
The current vision is to be the best deportation defense firm on the East Coast. And so the goal is to have an office at every immigration court location on the East Coast, except for Florida. That's just a personal decision. So there's like 10 or 11. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
is there more than one? Like, is there a couple in New York? Or is there
there's
just
one in New York. There's one in New Jersey. There's one in Philadelphia. There's one in Boston.
So is there usually like one in a state? I don't know. It depends.
So Pennsylvania has one.
Okay.
It's in Philly. They used to have a remote site in Pittsburgh, but that recently changed. There's one for the Carolinas. So North and South Carolina share Charlotte. But like Virginia and the DC area has like 3 or 4.
That makes sense.
Tennessee has one. Georgia has one. And there's clusters up in the Northeast too, but it depends on population. So,
and so that vision, as we're talking about data, mm-hmm. that vision, how do you quantify that? Is it success rate? Is it
how I quantify being the best?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. Success rate. It's success rate. I mean, we're definitely above the average. It's hard to compare yourself to anything, but like the published average of each judge. But yes. So like my whole thing has been like, we'll continue to grow until the quality decreases. But a lot of that is just my call. If I see a case and I think we should win it, if we don't win it, like that's a problem, regardless of what like our overall percentage is.
Yeah.
as we grow, that's something I don't want to have to move away from. But that's a challenge, right? Because as I get farther away from the work, the way that you manage would say, this is our percentage. And so just even if people are hitting the percentage, we're going to lose some of the cases that maybe I personally think we should have won.
Yeah.
So there's some give there. But I think if you like set the bar high enough, you can feel good about it. But yeah, that's the ultimate vision.
And how are you feeling getting further away from the practice?
Right now, I enjoy running a business more than I like the work of like preparing for trial. I am better at preparing for a trial than I am at running a business. But I like the challenge of like running a business. I like the diversity of tasks. I like the ability to dream. Preparing for a trial is, for me, maybe not for everybody, it's like a pretty dark place mentally. It's like, what is every single thing that could go wrong? And let me prepare for that eventual outcome. Rarely does every single thing go wrong. But if you don't prepare for everything, the one thing you didn't prepare for is the thing that's going to happen. In business, it's like, it's more of a creative dreaming type of exercise. And yes, there's implementation and management. There's hard parts about that too. But the hard part about running a business to me is like your appetite for risk. And that's just like not that hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty high tolerance for risk and also failure. When preparing for a trial, like I do not have an appetite for failure because like it's not my failure. It's like someone else is like paying the consequences if I fail there. So yeah, I'm better at the thing that I enjoy less right now. I mean, it's still super rewarding.
Yeah.
But like if a marketing campaign fails, it's not the same as if like someone gets a deportation order. Right. So yeah. So it's a little bit different. So
yeah. I like the idea, even just the simple fact of like I'm creating an org structure right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking at traditional org structures and I'm like, that's dumb.
Right.
It's too micromanaging and like all this other stuff. And to be able, to your point, the creativity to be able to say like, how am I going to create a cohort? How am I going to create a pod? How can I create an org structure that is more aligned with my vision and my values? It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. So before we go into closing questions, is there anything else that maybe we haven't talked about that you would like to talk about?
No, I think we've covered everything on the business side. Yeah.
Very cool. So, Ashley, what is your definition of success?
So my definition of success is to create a business that stands beside people. And I mean that in the sense that in defense work, sometimes you're representing people who you're going to need a miracle to win. And, you know, I'm transparent with that. But at the end of it, like our clients should feel like they had somebody standing beside them in court, telling their story, representing them as a human. And also for our employees. Like, I think that like if our employees and our clients feel like Lively Law Firm has like stood beside me and like seen me as the individual that I am and their work has reflected that, like, I think I'll feel good about what we're building.
Yeah. A great mission, right? Simple, but impactful. I'm going to take a quick step out of that. And as you hired 22 different attorneys, is that something that you talk to an attorney about? Because that's a transference of values. That's a value that Ashley has adhered to. And that's a value that Lively Law Firm is adhering to. When you hire, is that something that's like, this is a sort of prerequisite? Like you have to adhere to these values.
Yeah. So I do talk to attorneys. I mean, I talk to all staff about that. And I talk, you know, I mentioned before, like storytelling. I'm really big on the human component of law because people, lawyers included, have a misconception that like, if I present the law, then we're going to win. And to ignore the fact that our judges are humans with their own experiences and our clients are humans with their own experiences and we are humans with our own experiences, I think misses a lot of opportunity for success.
Huge, yeah.
And so it's a big conversation because we take a lot of cases that are very challenging. if we took cases that we always knew we were going to win, like we don't have to stand beside people. Like our mission could be like, let's win and everybody wins and it's fine. So I talked like, listen, yes, this case is hard. The law is hard. The judge is hard. Like this is a difficult case. And like, we're still going to stand beside this person. And when you do bad work, our client deserves better. And you have to remember, this is someone who walked across Mexico with her children and is cleaning houses to give her family a better life. And if you can't work hard for that, then like you got to go somewhere else, because to me, I just can't find a more motivating reason to like stand beside people. So yes, we talk about standing beside people a lot and presenting their story, presenting them as a human, and everybody at the firm buys into that. And I've found that even if I don't feel like they 100% buy in at the beginning, as they get to know our clients, like buy-in's like really easy. Like our clients are very sympathetic, good people for the most part. And so even if they're not all the way there, like it's pretty easy to get there. Like once you meet our clients and talk to them and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that was, as you were talking, I was like, I wonder how many people you've hired that say, oh yeah, you know, that sounds like a great mission, great vision. And then like you get into it and it's just like, oh no, wait, this is a lot harder. But yeah, you start hearing some of those stories and it's just kind of like, okay, it makes it all worth it.
I mean, there have been some people that are like, yes, I love the idea of working hard and standing beside people. But it's the same concept of like diversity. It's like, yeah, we want to be diverse. And you know, it's really hard, diversity. It's really hard to sit in a room with people that are like fundamentally different than you, use different words, see the world a different way, dress a different way, do not view any of your important things the same way you do. It's like, yeah, it's really hard. Yeah. It's, and so I always tell people that I'm like, I'm going to say things to you that it's easy to be like, yes, those are amazing, but it sucks.
Yeah.
Like it sucks. It sucks to work, to be diverse. It sucks to stand beside people. Like it is a lot of work. It's worth it in the end, but like, yeah, I've had people are like, that sounds amazing. Can't wait to tell people stories. And then it's 8 p.m. on a Wednesday and they're like, actually, I hate telling people stories. I'm going to go find happiness somewhere else.
So. Right, right. I can remember the first time I had a lived experience where it was a round table of 20 Black women and I was the only white person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm very uncomfortable right now. And then like I immediately transferred to, this must be what a lot of Black people feel like in a room of all white people, right? And it's just the, to your point about the diversity of things.
Yeah.
Okay, last, second closing question, kind of circling us back.
Mm-hmm.
What is a lesson that you have learned from a failure?
That they don't really matter. Like it's going to be fine. That lesson comes from a place of privilege. Like if I fail, I can go be a lawyer at somebody else's firm. But I've had really epic failures in a lot of ways at the business, right? There have been times when a consultant comes to me like, if you continue how you're continuing, you have 60 days left of this business. And I panic and pivot. Or, you know, epic staffing failures that are, the failure is only attributed to me and, you know, my failure to onboard somebody successfully. And my business coach actually told me this. He's like, if just consistently over the course of your business, you make more good decisions than bad, like you're going to be fine. You know, because when you lose an attorney because you made the wrong hire and then you didn't set them up for success and now everybody else has to shoulder an entire attorney's caseload, you start to question like, can I even sit in a room with somebody and like understand if they meet the qualifications of a job description? But yeah, like my biggest lesson from failure is like, it's probably going to be fine. And for people that don't know me, that is not the way I'm wired. I'm like not generally sunny side of life. So I'm normally like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. And I'm probably going to be experiencing homelessness as a result of this decision. But normally it's fine. Normally it's fine as long as you're willing to pivot. So.
Yeah. What is one actionable item that you would give to a woman who's thinking about starting their business?
Okay, so I have two answers to that. The first one is like, sounds like a joke, but it's real. So I say this to everybody about anything. People are like, what is the first rule of rugby? What is the first rule of finance? Here's my first rule for everything. Number one, believe in yourself. So I tell that to my nieces and nephews, and like, it's funny, but like that literally is the first rule. But the actual item is, and I'm sure that other people have said this before, like start before you're ready. Like you're never ready. And you can't get ready. You can't get ready till you do it. And so planning, lots of people dream and lots of people plan. Not lots of people do. And for women specifically, they're just like a lot more, there are a lot of men in the world doing a worse job than what you could do. And so like, just start before you're ready. Cause like a million other people have started thinking they were more ready than like you are. So that's my.
And I even think a lot of people, to your point, right? You and Shantae laid on the living room floor and were dreaming up things. That's a part of a plan. You guys were forming a plan.
Right.
And I tell people, you probably have more of a plan than you realize. Mm-hmm. And that's enough for you to just get going.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So Ashley, where can people find you?
So we have an office in Charlotte. We have an office in Pittsburgh. You can find us online. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And anybody can shoot me an email. It's easily accessible on the interweb. So, but yeah, you can find us easily on the internet. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Misha.